himself over and over again, why on earth do we keep leaving one place for another, one job, one world, one set of friends, until we finally come to the end of our time and the last of our places? From my first week among you until now, what continues to amaze me about this community is the centripetal force of love and family and home that keeps children who once left for college or careers or adventures returning to family and friends and affiliates, never to leave again. Look at you, 2, 3, 4 generations in a pew. As a child who moved across the country 13 times before leaving home, as a minister whose previous church averaged 100 people leaving each year and 100 people joining every year because of careers changed and degrees earned, I did not understand this returning and staying. Until that same centripetal force took hold of me. Search committees have tried their best throughout the years to convince me of God's call elsewhere. But the pull of baptizing and confirming and even marrying a generation from beginning to end, as well as the privilege of growing up and growing old together, these things have kept me tethered to you from then until now. Now, of course, I will necessarily be leaving the home we have made with each other in the next year or so. The fact that prompted me to revisit Peter's belated answer to his friend's question, why do you ever leave this place? Peter finally answers that we leave home to be a saint. To be a saint meaning what? To be a saint, he says, means to live not with hands clenched to grasp, to hold tight to a life that is always slipping away, the more tightly we hold it. But it is to live with hands stretched out, both to give and to receive with gladness. To be a saint, he counsels, is to live a life that is always giving itself away, and yet is always full. To leave what has been for what will be. Not so much physically in your case, but imaginatively. To live in glad expectation of the new thing God is about to do among you is to leave home imaginatively in this year as you are becoming saints. On that day long ago in the region of Caesarea Philippi, Jesus invited the crowd of his disciples to leave home in order to be saints. He bid them deny their instinct for grasping and holding tight to a life that is always slipping away. He summoned them to lose the lives of stasis and security that they loved more than they loved him. And he challenged them to live with hands stretched out both to give and receive with gladness the life that awaits anyone who follows him, even if those hands end up being stretched out on a cross. Hurricane Florence and Typhoon Omaha may be the reason I am thinking this way today, but as we naturally spend centripetally around the center of friends and family, drawing us closer in and causing us sometimes to hold a bit too tightly to the way things are, Jesus puts a reverse spin on our life together. is the eye, the center, the dwelling place of God, who is ever on the move. Spinning out from the center of his inexhaustible love, centrifugally, flinging us into the world and away from every security, dawning and rising, so that we may live with hands stretched out, both to give and to receive with gladness. Why do we come? To follow him who is our home. Thanks be to God.
It is a letter. Mark 8:31 says, "Then Jesus began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders." Must undergo. The Greek words applied in our English translation of must is the word deo. Translated another way, it means it is necessary, it is inevitable. So it is not that Jesus is woefully playing the part of the masochist here, saying that he must suffer because he wants to suffer. Rather, it is simply acknowledging a sad and undeniable truth about life, about his life, that it is inevitable that he will suffer. Just as it is sadly for all of us. For some of us, our suffering will be mercifully less. For some of us, it is mercilessly more. But the common denominator holds true for all of us. We will all go through heartbreak. We will all lose people that we love. We will all one day turn helpless bystanders as the not-so-slow glacier of time envelops and isolates us all. It is inevitable. For one day, even Seth will grow up and push away from my wife's embrace. One day my son will grow out of his innocence, his Thomas the Train collection, his dinosaur socks, his binky. One day we will again return to an empty nest and look at each other and wonder, did you always have that streak of gray? Those crow's feet, asking in turn, when and how and why? And then, if, maybe today will be the day where Seth picks up the phone and rings home. It's not that we wish it to happen, you see, or that it must, because we also desire it. It's just inevitable. Now, the greatest movie of all time is The Shawshank Redemption. There can be no argument, and I will hear none. Two minor characters serve as a metaphor for the entire film and an analogy for this sermon. Of course, I'm talking about none other than Brooks Kaplan and J.K. Berg. Brooks, a shriveled-up old convict who serves as the prison's librarian, one day finds a young bird who's been severely injured. He takes this bird in and names him Jake. Brooks does not let the cruelty of prison impact his love for this bird. He feeds him from his own lunch plate. He brings him worms from the yard. As a result, Jake, this injured bird, grows into a full-sized bird. His wings heal, his voice now strong. Jake, the bird's growth, thus symbolizes how hope and life can be found and realized even in the most hopeless of places and situations. But when Brooks is suddenly and surprisingly granted parole, he becomes depressed and despondent instead of excited and free. And he begins to realize that he won't be able to take Jake with him, that it would be time to set him free as well. Moreover, Brooks begins to wonder how he'll make it on the outside after having been locked up for so long. For in prison, of all places, Brooks Kaplan made himself a home. Nonetheless, some time goes by and Brooks sets Jake free. He's released from prison. He ends up in his own apartment on some main street working at some job that doesn't utilize any of his skills. And so this only furthers his depression. He now longs for the walls of his cell. He sits alone in the park, wondering about where Jake may be, where he may be flying off to today. And so consumed by his grief, Brooks Hatton hangs himself at his own apartment. And some of you might say it was inevitable. For the hope in the future that he gave to Jake, his bird, wasn't tangible enough now to him. For he had become too costly of an old relic, unable to see beyond the varnish of dust that had settled over him. Much the same way in our New Testament text, Peter is unable to realize the hope and the light right there in his presence. He is dead set on holding on to an antiquated version of the Messiah, a strong leader, almost militaristic in style. Peter cannot accept that this version of the Messiah, this Christ in Jesus, was yet destined to suffer. Peter, like Brooks, was so desperate to hold on to the idea of what he had, the idea of what came before, that he can't witness what comes next. And so he goes as far as taking Jesus aside and rebukes him. Peter rebukes Jesus. You see, like Brooks, Peter became institutionalized and couldn't fully grasp what was new and possible and happening right there before him. But friends, did you see? Are you getting it? It is simply inevitable. Some of us have just been around or stuck in place for too long. Some of us have become too institutionalized. Some of us then will inevitably suffer more than others. But either we, or the people who matter most to us, leave our homes, our sanctuaries, for something, someone, or somewhere else. But my friends, hear this. No matter what came before, there is hope for what comes after. For hope, I believe, is also inevitable. And make no mistake, we have already been restored, prepared, and liberated towards this hope by Christ, our Savior, and his gospel, and even by his faithful daughter and our shepherd. My friends, we are Jake. There is life upon us, a new spirit in our wings, a future to behold. If we're just able to look forward, want it, and grasp it, then I pray and I think that we will. Amen.
Take up your cross and follow me, Jesus says. And we know we should, but let's be real. Leaving home is the stuff of heartbreak. Either we have loved our home and are saddened by the thought of breaking away to start anew, or we have hated our home and are plagued by feelings of regret, guilt, hurt, or anger as we slam the door behind us on the way out. Or maybe it's some of both. Either way, leaving home is the stuff of heartbreak. Leaving home means abandoning our favorite chair, you know, the one beside the window with all the natural light, the one that's perfect for reading. Leaving home means mourning when one voice is suddenly missing from conversations around the dinner table. Those among us who have just sent a child off to college or have just lost a loved one know this heartbreak in its freshest form. Leaving home means expanding our idea of what is acceptable or who is acceptable, of what we welcome into our lives or whom we will welcome. Leaving home means coming to terms with the idea that a certain beloved pastor will retire, whether or not we chain ourselves to the doors of this building to keep him in. Leaving home means becoming untethered to the way things have question has been floating around in my head, mostly because my relatives who chose not to evacuate either could not afford to do so, or have lived more than 80 years in the same tiny South Carolina town and cannot conceive of the idea of leaving the only home they've ever known. So I pray for their safety and for their peace amidst the rising waters. And while I pray, I consider that Jesus calls us to a mandatory evacuation. We are not allowed to stay still, to stay the same, to hold on to the idea that only some people are worth our time, attention, and compassion, while others are not. We are exhorted instead to move, to grow, to leave home, even if home is wonderful, so that we can learn to love the way God is calling us to love. In a sense, I went back home this last week as I began a new degree program at Princeton Theological Seminary. The seminary became a home for me while I studied there. Finally, there were people, professors even, who did not think I was crazy when I interpreted a parable differently than it had traditionally been interpreted. Finally, there were people who understood my Bart and Bonhoeffer jokes. When I graduated from seminary and first showed up here in this sanctuary, I have to tell you I felt sad to have left the comfort of my seminary home, even as I felt excited to be here. I confess to you that I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. But you have been my teachers. You have taught me to love better, just as the seminary once welcomed me and taught me to. So this past week I went home again, and as I sat in orientation for my new degree,